Well, welcome to iForumRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iForumRx, and today we're going to be talking about de-prescribing. I think one of the most difficult clinical problems we face is the lack of evidence regarding when and how to de-prescribe medications. We have plenty of data about starting medications, but not when to stop them. A recently published study caught my eye because it's one of only a handful of studies that compared the continuation of therapy to the discontinuation of therapy. And in this case, the investigators were trying to determine what the impact of discontinuing alpha-1 blockers might be in men with benign prostatic hyperplasia, or BPH. Joining me today to talk about this study are Erica Cranage and Stephanie Crist. Doctors Cranage and Crist are both on faculty at the St. Louis College of Pharmacy in St. Louis, Missouri. Dr. Cranage practices in the SLU Care Family Medicine and Dr. Crist at Mercy Internal Medicine Clinics. Erica, Stephanie, welcome to the iForumRx podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, good to be here.
So before we get started, I want you to imagine you're seeing LM, a 71-year-old African-American man, in the family medicine clinic today for a routine follow-up visit. The patient has high blood pressure, BPH, stage 3 chronic kidney disease, and is obese. The patient currently takes low-dose aspirin, irbesartan, tamsulosin, and dutasteride. He also admits to using saw palmetto and pumpkin seeds from time to time. When you ask him about his lower urinary tract symptoms, he states they're better than before, but he's still having some hesitancy and post-void dribbling. He gets up 1 to 2 times a night to urinate, and when given the AUA BPH symptom questionnaire, his score is 9. Looking back in his chart, you note that his score about a year ago was 15. He weighs 219 pounds, and his BMI is 32.3. His blood pressure today is 136 over 84, and he had a Chem-7 drawn this morning. The results look stable. His blood glucose was 87, and his BUN is 19. Serum creatinine is 1.8, with an estimated eGFR reported to be 48 mils per minute. And his electrolytes were otherwise all within normal limits. So, Erica, before we talk about the study you reviewed for iForumRx, can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that are going on in your mind at this point? What additional information might you want to collect and assess during this encounter? And are there any additional treatment options you'd be considering at this point for LM?
Yeah, so the very first thing I'd want to evaluate more is his level of adherence with his current medications. There has been some data to suggest that the adherence rate with combination therapy after a year is not ideal, and some patients may not be hitting that 80% or more doses that we would recommend. So I'd certainly want to know, has he had any adherence problems? Has he had any side effects that we need to be aware of with the medications that he's currently taking? Additionally, I would like some information about the supplements that he took, so the saw palmetto and the pumpkin seeds. He sort of had mentioned that it's from time to time, and so I'd want to know how long ago was that and what doses was he taking. When we look at saw palmetto, there is some data that suggests that it is safe for up to 3 years, but the kind of efficacy data on saw palmetto in general has been really inconsistent, a lot of which is based on methodologies of how supplement studies are completed. With the pumpkin seed extract, there's about 6 months worth of data that's available. And again, it's possibly safe, potentially effective, but again, not necessarily consistent in regards to the level of evidence to support the use of supplements. So just finding out a little bit more about what he was taking in regards to those supplements and if he saw any benefit or not while he was on those supplements. Another piece of information that I think would be helpful to know is how enlarged his prostate is currently and how large was it prior to initiating combination therapy, because that could potentially bring up some discussions on if surgery might be indicated for this particular patient. And then looking at his symptom score, he had received the AUA BPH symptom questionnaire, which does help us understand how frequently he's having these symptoms, but it does lack the quality of life question. So I'd be very interested to know you know, what is the impact that his BPH symptoms are actually having on his quality of life? Is it something that is hindering him from being able to do what he would like to be able to do? And then lastly, I'd be interested to know his attempts or interest at losing some weight, because there is some data to suggest that with weight loss, we can help reduce some symptoms as it decreases the amount of pressure on the bladder.
So Stephanie, in the commentary you wrote for iFormRx, you briefly review some of the data regarding the use of combination therapy to treat BPH symptoms, specifically the use of alpha blockers with 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. Is this something that we should routinely do in patients with moderate to severe BPH symptoms? What are the benefits of combination therapy?
Yes. Originally, in treatment studies, the goal was to decrease the problematic lower urinary tract symptoms or LUTS that often resulted from an enlarged prostate. But more recently, there has been an additional goal to alter the disease progression to prevent further complications of the lower urinary tract symptoms. And so currently, combination therapy is recommended for all men with moderate to severe symptoms, and that's rated according to the AUA questionnaire with a score of 8 or greater. And it's especially recommended to have combination therapy in men with an enlarged prostate being greater than 40 grams in size. If there's coexisting symptoms from bladder outlet obstruction or overactive bladder symptoms, they can use an anticholinergic as well, but generally the use of that alpha blocker is preferred. The combination strategy is really looking at the two mechanisms of actions of both the alpha blocker and the alpha reductase inhibitor. And so really that combination provides a quick and long-term relief. So the alpha blocker will help with the quick relief, and over the long term, the 5-alpha reductase inhibitor will help shrink the size of the prostate. There are two sort of landmark studies that have looked at the use of combination therapy. The first being the MTOPS, or Medical Therapy of Prostate Symptoms study, and they compared placebo versus finasteride versus doxazosin versus combination. And the other landmark study was COMBAT, or combination of Avodart and Tamsulosin, and that study looked at dutasteride versus Tamsulosin versus combination. So both of these landmark studies really demonstrated that combination therapy was superior to monotherapy, both in symptomatic control as well as the decrease in the prostate size.
So Erica, the article you reviewed for your commentary, which was published in the October issue of the Journal of Urology, not a journal I read very often, that's for sure, is entitled, and it's a long title, Effects of Withdrawing Alpha-1 Blockers from Combination Therapy with Alpha-1 Blocker and 5-Alpha Reductase Inhibitor in Patients with Lower Urinary Tract Symptoms Suggestive of Benign Prostatic Hyperplasia, a Prospective and Comparative Trial Using Urodynamics. So, for those in our audience who haven't read that paper, and I imagine it's very, very few, can you give us a brief summary of the methods and major findings from this study?
Absolutely. I wish they would have come up with a catchy title or acronym for this particular trial, because you're right, it is a bit of a mouthful. So this study was a 24-month Japanese single-center open-label trial that placed just over 100 treatment-naive men with moderate to severe BPH symptoms, placed the patients on dutasteride or sulodosin for a year. After that completion of a year of combination therapy, they then randomized the patients into half to continue on with combination therapy, and the other half had the alpha blocker withdrawn from therapy, and then they followed up after a year of continued combination therapy or monotherapy to see if it had an impact on patient outcomes. The primary outcome from this study was change in International Prostate Symptom Score, which is the AUA questionnaire with the additional question regarding quality of life, as well as many secondary outcomes, including objective urodynamic studies. Not surprisingly, after a year of combination therapy, all outcomes significantly improved as compared to baseline. following the withdrawal of alpha-1 therapy, there was no significant difference in outcomes between the group that continued on combo therapy as compared to the group that was now on monotherapy. Interestingly, they did actually evaluate patients who did have worsening symptoms after that year mark. And when they looked at it, 12 months, between 25 to 30% of folks did have worsening symptoms actually in both groups. So it wasn't just seen in monotherapy. And so when they looked at those who did have worsening symptoms after that, during that second year of the trial, and the only characteristic that they found that was significant was those patients who had elevated BMIs or elevated body weight at baseline. So that might suggest that some of our concern about worsening symptoms may not necessarily always be treatment related, but it could actually be somewhat related to the patient's weight and how that may be worsening their symptoms over the course of time.
So Stephanie, tell us a little bit about what you believe to be the key strengths and limitations of this study. Are there any major sources of bias, potential confounders, or other threats to the internal validity of the study?
Yes, this study had both some strengths and some weaknesses. And one of the strengths of this study was the low attrition rate. So after the screening period took place, where they screened about 150 participants, there ended up being 132 that were randomized to either the combination group or the monotherapy group. And so at the start, there were 66 participants in both of those groups. And over the course of the study, the attrition rate in the combination group ended up being 9. And in the monotherapy group, only 6 were lost to follow-up. This was a longer follow-up study. They followed them for an additional 12 months. And I think that is reasonable when you're looking at a withdrawal period time. This study also included both subjective and objective assessments of urinary function, which can be helpful in looking at that change in symptomatic control. As for the weaknesses, this was an open label study, and so inherently there can be some skewed results, especially when the participants are reporting subjective symptoms. Adherence. Unfortunately, this study did not evaluate adherence rates really at all. In 2015, there was a group that looked at a population-based cohort study, and they found overall adherence rate to BPH medicine was as low as 29% within the first year of taking the combination therapy. And then subsequently, the adherence rate continued to diminish. And so I think that is something that is really important to evaluate and would be really interesting to see if that had any effect on symptomatic control.
So, Erica, Stephanie, what are the implications for practice? Should we be looking for deprescribing opportunities during every patient encounter? And more specifically, should we routinely consider stopping alpha blockers in men with BPH who've been taking dual therapy for more than a year? Do you think these findings are sufficiently compelling to change guidelines? And what would you recommend in a case like LM?
In my opinion, based on the study and its findings, I don't believe that guidelines would change treatment strategies right now, but I think it brings up some excellent clinical questions and something that needs further study. And so when we look at the overall demands of treatment for BPH, the number will be continuing to grow with our aging population who are living longer, and as well as the obesity epidemic. There are a lot of benefits to thinking about decreasing medication and coming from combination therapy to monotherapy. But overall, more research, I think, is needed that really look at the modifiable risk factors for treatment of the lower urinary tract symptoms and really look at weight loss. Is it effective at improving lower urinary tract symptoms?
And I think in regards to your question about deprescribing for this particular patient, I think it must be a shared decision process between the patient and all of his healthcare providers. Looking at his symptom score, it is still a little bit elevated at 9, so we still have kind of moderate severity symptoms at this point. And so we'd have to kind of discuss the options. This now, with this study, we do have some suggestion that it might be worth potentially a trial off of his alpha blocker to see if it does make a dramatic change in his symptoms. Suddenly they worsen. And if that's the case, then we can always start back on the medication if needed. But I think this gives us as prescribers and those who interact with these types of patients an opportunity to potentially have a discussion about removing therapy and what the impact that could potentially have for the patient, both from a side effect profile, a pill burden standpoint, as well as an overall out-of-pocket cost in a time where we're all worried about the total cost of healthcare.
Well, Erica, Stephanie, I want to thank you both for joining me today to discuss the treatment of BPH and deprescribing. It's clear from your comments that you believe this study adds valuable information about BPH and the potential discontinuation of alpha blockers in men who've already been on combination therapy for at least a year. But we still have lots to learn, particularly about the impact of weight on BPH symptoms, I think something that we don't really talk with our patients about very much, and potentially could have a significant role. Well, tell us what you think. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.